This episode is brought to you by Amy. Clangers happen. Lucky you're with Amy. Welcome back, everyone. Another episode of Tommy Talks. And this week we are joined by Richmond superstar Matthew Richardson. We're very lucky to have the great man in the building, and he was on fire. Some classic stories from back in the day. A really funny story about what Danny Frawley did to David Roden when he was late. He talks about his body language coach. You won't believe who that is. And some classics. I don't want to give any more away because actually so much in here. So make sure you tune in. You'll really enjoy this one. And let us know what you think. Aces, I know I always go on about the Rixies, but I got huge news. We have all our styles and colours restocked on the website right now. It's been months. We ran out of stock, but we're back. Get online, grab some sunglasses at rixeyewear.com.au right now and use our little discount code ACES if you want a 20% discount code on the house. Righto, let's get into the show. Welcome back, everyone. Got a huge guest today. Richo, you're in the building. This is your neighbourhood, isn't it? How far away would this be from your joint?
Well, we're in Abbotsford, so I'm just straight up sort of Hoddle Street there up into High Street, Northgate, and just a 10-minute drive away, but it can take longer knowing Hoddle Street.
We've organised it around 9:30, so it wasn't too bad. Mate, thanks so much for coming on. I've actually thoroughly enjoyed like researching more and more about your career, and we've got a lot of friends in the industry, and I've got a little bit of dirt, and I'm really looking forward to today's chat, mate. So thanks for coming on.
Good to be. I'm a little bit worried because I do know a few people that you know, so it'll be interesting.
Looking it's all forward. Pre-recorded.
Good bloody studio you got here, by the way.
Yeah, Roller Media. Yeah. Bredo's done an outstanding job. So thanks, mate. It is good. But let's start with life at home. Three girls and a dad, and obviously media is pretty heavy commitments on the weekend. But what does your week look like, I guess, Monday to Friday?
Yeah, it's pretty hectic with three kids. So I've got Zoe, who's turning 7 in September. Then I've got little Riley, who's turning 4 soon, and little Ella, who's turning 2. So, yeah, it's pretty hectic. But, yeah, my week during footy season looks like pretty much have Monday off, just at home and hanging out after the weekend of footy. I do a podcast for the Tigers on Tuesday, Talking Tigers, which we've been doing now for, 13 years, I reckon. We've been doing that every Tuesday. So, yeah, I really enjoy that. We've got a good loyal bunch of Tiger fans that listen. Then I do radio Wednesday night for 3RW, do a bit of research on Thursday for the footy, and then we hop into the footy Friday night, occasionally a Saturday night, and then every Sunday. So most weekends I do at least 2 games, sometimes 3. So during the footy season it's pretty much a 6-day a week sort of thing. And then when you get home, mate, it's all hands on deck. The girls are, you know, got so many activities now, ballet, swimming, gymnastics, you know, gym, so... Yeah, it's a busy time, but it's fun.
What's the hardest one? Like, I think about when I was growing up, I think cricket would be the one thing I don't want my son, if I had one, to play. But for the girls, what's the one that's got a lot of time commitment around it?
Yeah, probably the oldest one now is sort of, you know, just got something on every day, it feels like. You know, after school, you're off. So last night we're at swimming, you know, then there'll be, you know, gymnastics, and then they've got play dates. I mean, they're always at a friend's house. They're starting to have sleepovers now, which is interesting, but... Yeah, they've always got to be doing something. Well, as a kid, when I got home, I just got thrown outside and I came in when it was dark. It's different now, obviously, and I grew up in a small town in Tassie, so you could probably run around the streets pretty safely, whereas, you know, I probably wouldn't want my girls out doing that. So, yeah, it's just, mate, there's always something on. You've got to coordinate your diary with your wife sort of at the start of every week and off you go.
Ah, that's great. Well, I know... I've sat down with BT before he researches the game, and he's got this old school big piece of, I don't know what it is, cardboard, and he tracks all the teams on their wins and their everything, right? And I know and he's thorough, and it's just the way he goes about it. Have you got a system with your preparation that you go with the teams and the players and how you kind of understand the new guys coming through or the guys that are on top of their game?
Yeah, look, I like to write things down still, so probably old school. I'm looking at you there. You've got the phone with your notes on it. I find... If I'm typing something, I just don't feel like it goes in
digital's
my brain.
I'm with you. I must say, I normally have a run sheet, but I wanted to come here a bit earlier today. Yeah. And I was like, I can do it off my phone as well. But you're right, writing it down definitely helps more.
Yeah, and I think I got that off Bruce McAvaney. You know, when I started in the media, I was lucky enough to work with, you know, Bruce and Dennis Cometti, the two probably living legends
Kings,
of,
yeah.
And I just watched Bruce, and he wrote everything down. He cut little bits of newspaper clippings out, and he'd tape them or glue them onto bits of paper. Then he'd write notes, and I just watched him doing that, and I thought, I think that's the way I'm going to do it. So, yeah, I like to write everything down, and I feel like when I'm writing it down, it goes into your head a little bit better. Mm. So, yeah, I just have a couple of pages of notes on each game. I think as the season wears on, you probably do less writing because you probably just know how each team plays and how each player plays. But, yeah, it's probably spend 3 or 4 hours on a Thursday writing out some notes and then you hop into it. But it does go in better that way, I think.
Yeah. I was just thinking, now, first of all, I admire you about like so much, and also how you're not jealous and how you love the Tigers and you're stuck fat and – just watching you, even just the tears of joy when they win, like it just says good bloke straight away if you know the game, because some people can be jealous, why not, you know, because I didn't have one and they've got it. And just to see how connected you are to the club, I admire it so much because I feel like you don't get to see a lot of that these days. When you're commentating primetime games when Richmond's playing, how hard is it for you not to be a fanboy while you're commentating? Because everyone knows you love the Tigers. It's not like BT, for example. He actually doesn't have a real soft spot. He's always encouraging the second team. The team that's behind, he wants a close game and he's stirring the pot a bit. But everyone knows you love the Tigers. So when they're playing, it's a tight one. How do you go commentating?
Oh, mate, I'm a lunatic in the box. If you had footage of me commentating, I don't know that I'm moving around and – you know, I'm sort of riding every bump, and I even do that sometimes for a neutral game if it's a close game. It's just sort of, I think, you know, I always wear my heart on my sleeve as a player. Yeah. I just don't know I'm doing it. Body language. I twitch and move around. So, yeah, if you're in the box and it was a tight Richmond game standing behind me, you'd think I was a lunatic. But it's funny what people actually think. Richmond supporters, I've had plenty come up to me in the street and say, oh, Rich, are you – you're too hard on Richmond. And I think I probably am, because I think I don't want people to think I'm being biased towards Richmond. So I'll probably go harder on Richmond when I'm doing Richmond games. But then you look at Twitter or whatever it's called now, X, after a game, the opposition fans go, oh, Richo, you shouldn't be doing Richmond games. So yeah, I don't know which one it is. But, I do wear my heart in my sleeve as a commentator. I actually hate doing Richmond games. I've got the Tigers tonight, Anzac Day Eve. And I'd prefer to be doing tomorrow, you know, not have that sort of feeling of being worried about being biased. I don't want people to think I am. So, yeah, it's a tough one doing Tiger games.
And you do love watching, like, the Tigers, don't you? Like, if they weren't on, you just go have a beer in the stands and watch it like a fan, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I do. I've got a lot of Richmond mates that barrack for the Tigers, obviously, and we really enjoy getting together as a group of mates and going and watching. Don't get to go as often as I'd like. Probably go 2 or 3 times a year and sit in the outer, have a few beers and chill out and watch. So,
yeah, that's great.
Yeah, look, I'm a Richmond fan. I always will be.
Yeah, it's great. No, as I said, man, I admire it so much. And it's great. I think about myself. I played at 2 clubs and I grew up barracking for Essendon. Yeah. And I love them all. I love them all.
Yeah.
But I don't
have a passion for one.
I think Giants is the closest.
Yeah.
And Fremantle, I definitely connect more when I'm around them, like, because they're so far away. It's hard to kind of stay in touch. But when they're down here, I always catch up with the boys and there's a fair few people still at the club. So definitely Giants and Freo. But because I left the Giants last, I feel like that's the last connection I've had with a club.
Mm. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I know a lot of guys that have been to multiple clubs, clearly, and it's becoming more and more the case because you get guys that coach at a club or play for a couple. Whereas I've only ever played for Richmond, and I've been working there since I finished doing that podcast. So I've only ever had that, you know, affiliation with the Tigers. It'd be interesting if you went somewhere else.
Yeah, like a coaching role or anything.
Do you finish coaching and go back to Richmond, or do you stay with the club that you're at?
It's actually funny. I ran into Leon Cameron at the shops the other day because he's at Swans now.
Yeah. He's been to 4 now. Has it? Probably 5, actually.
But because he was at the Giants for so long and obviously the head coach. Yeah, well, 4 now, considering he'd played at the Tigers and the Dogs. But I was just I had a little laugh. They said, mate, you're coaching, you're the GM now of the Swans. I go, mate, we used to hate them, didn't we? Yeah. And he goes, oh, mate, I've had to adapt. And I go, because I think they were both undefeated when I ran into him. I said, imagine Swans Giants granny. And he just started laughing.
My best mate that I grew up with in Tassie, he came to Melbourne and played at Carlton, and he barracked for Carlton as a kid.
Oh, that's great.
And we were living together. Then he came and played for Richmond. We played together. So we grew up together. Then we ended up playing together at Richmond. Then he went to the Dogs, Benny Harrison. So then, you know, he's ended up at the Dogs. So he played for the team he barracked for as a kid. Then he ended up at Richmond, then the Dogs. But he's passionate Bulldogs now.
Yeah.
So he ended
last
up.
Last club.
The last club, I think. So it's interesting.
I mean, I still love Freo. Don't get me wrong. I think it's when I'm around all my teammates, but a lot of the players I actually played with, there's not many left. There's probably like 10 on the list that are still playing. We're at the Giants, it'd probably be 30.
Yeah.
And then
so you're still good mates with them all.
Yeah. Let's get stuck into the Tigers, mate. I've got so many questions here, and I'm so fascinated. I must say the dummy spits is just something that stands out to me. I was on YouTube last night and I was having an absolute field day, and me and Brado actually pulled up a clip yesterday where you went back with the flight. Some bloke's taking your head off clean and it'd probably be 4 weeks this day. You didn't even get a free kick. And
I remember that one.
Do you? Yeah. Do you remember it? Like, what are your thoughts when you see, like, when you think about your own, you know, incidents like that, and then you see, like, someone like my mate Toby Green getting rubbed out for going straight through the line, just turning his body. Like, do you laugh and go, maybe my dummy spits were well in reason?
Well, just on the Toby, I understand why they're rubbing players out for it because of the concussion and, you know, it's a minefield out there at the moment with the litigation going on. So I know why they're trying to do it. But if you put yourself in Toby's situation there, he jumps off the ground. When he jumps off the ground, he thinks that he can still take a chest mark. You realise that you're going to be that split second late. So what reaction is it? Do you just sort of open yourself up or do you turn? And it's a difficult one. I understand why. But, yeah, look, when I played, I guess there was a bit more of that. There was still a bit of, you know, contact in the game. As for the dummy spits, look, I used to get home from games and, you know, back in the day, Friday night footy was on delay and you'd get home and the last sort of highlights of the game would still be on, the post-match would still be on, and I'd be looking at some of the stuff I did and I wouldn't have any memory of it. It was sort of in the moment, and I'd look at it and go, geez, you're a wanker. Like, I'd be embarrassed about what I did, but just didn't know I was doing it. I guess I wore my heart on my sleeve. I feel like I played my best when I was emotionally in the game, but it obviously spilled over a lot at times. I reckon my last 5 years I harnessed it a little bit better. Just took me about 12 years to get there.
Yeah, but I think I was listening to, it might have been BT's clip or whatever, Bogut talking about Draymond Green, and they were saying he can't take the edge off.
Yeah.
And he's completely different to you because he's doing some unique things on the court. But they reckon if they take that edge away from him, he'll lose himself as a player. Well, and
I
as
reckon
a
that's how I felt.
Yeah.
Like if I didn't have that emotion and that energy and that sort of passion when I was out there, I just feel like I wouldn't have played as good a footy as I could have played.
Mm.
So I learnt to harness it more positively towards the end, but no, I definitely needed it. I felt it got me involved in the game. You could get away with it too.
Yeah.
And the umpires back then, you could actually have a bit of, you know, to and fro with them. You know, you'd have a crack at them, they'd have a crack back at you. And it sort of took the edge off it when they did that.
Mm.
I remember one night over at Subiaco, we were playing the West Coast Eagles. And I had a history of missing goals, Tommy, as you know. And I took a mark sort of about 50 metres out just before the halftime siren. And I knew it was a big kick. I looked at the scoreboard, and if I had to kick the goal, I think it was going to get us back in front. You know, the team would have been up and about going in at halftime. And just as I was about to line up, a teammate got called for a blood rule. They noticed some blood on a teammate, so he had to walk off the ground. So I had a little bit more time to think about it. And as I'm standing there, the umpire, Darren Goldspink, who Goldie used to like to give a bit back as well, and he looked at me and he goes, geez, this is a big kick, Richo.
The umpire said
And I looked at him, I said, no shit, Goldie, right? So I've gone back. By that time, players come back on the ground, and I've gone back and put it out on the full, haven't I? Goldie's just looked at me and given me a wink. You prick.
That's awesome, though.
But I love that.
Yeah, I like that as
Whereas
well.
Whereas now you look at this descent, you can't have any sort of banter with the umpires.
Nah.
Whereas I think back then a little bit of banter was good.
Yeah, I agree. And I we love our American sport. I feel like if you watch the NBA, they even grab them and twist them and say, this is the movies doing what you're doing. And they're kind of coaching each other. Yeah. And it's just the way it is. Where
so you reckon they can still
I feel like they have way more, like they, I think the descent with them, they go hard, but it gets to a point where the refs had enough, just a couple of texts and you're out of the stadium. So
I reckon a little bit's all right.
Yeah,
obviously,
I do.
Obviously too much is not a good example for kids. But
what's the best spray you've given an umpire? Like, was there a game where you just go, I'm letting it go? You're like redhead thinking, not thinking at all. Just
there was one where it was on the southern stand side at the MCG. It was against Hawthorn. I reckon Sam Mitchell was involved. It was a bit of a pack situation on the ground. And in the build-up to the pack forming, I reckon I'd been held about four times, like at a ground ball, trying to pick up a ground ball. Before we ended up laying on the ball, the whistle's blown, and I just could not believe that I hadn't got a free kick. So I'm lying on the ground. There's a few players sort of on top of me. As the pack dispersed, I sort of looked at the umpire and I actually gave him the bird and sort of asked him where the free kick was. Incredibly, I don't even think it was a 50 or a free kick against. I think he just copped it on the chin.
Just copped it? Yeah. Oh, that's outstanding.
I don't know what I said, but the bird was involved. Imagine if he did that now.
Oh, yeah. I think my good mate Matty Tavernar did that at Peel Thunder and someone snapped it and ended up – we put it up in a little skit video that we did, but I think he got in trouble as well, a little fine. But yeah, that's the last time.
I got a fine a couple of times given the bird.
But it's funny, we had it as like our display picture there for a bit. He's in the twos giving the umpire a bird.
There was one I was walking off the ground in Perth, and I don't encourage kids to do this, obviously, but we'd been towed up by the Eagles, you know, back when they were a powerhouse team at Subi. And I'm walking off the ground and I could just hear a lot of abuse coming our way. And I remember thinking to myself, just walk off. And back then, the race at Subiaco, I felt like they were on top of you, the people sort of leaning over. And I'm walking off, and just as I got closer to the race, I could just hear this one guy yapping, and it was directed at me, just giving it to me. And I thought, cop it, walk straight down the race, don't say anything, don't react. And I reckon I got about 5 metres away from him, and he was questioning my fitness and my physical ability. And I'm like, one thing that I prided myself on was my fitness, like my running ability. I could run a game out, work pretty hard at it. And I thought, I'm not copping that from this bike. I hadn't looked at him yet because I had my head down. I looked up and this guy was about 150 kilos, I reckon. He had a West Coast jumper on, belly button hanging out, the big Bobby Lutz.
Yeah, Bobby Lutz.
And I thought, there is no way known I'm copping that from you, pal, questioning my fitness.
Yes.
You're 150. So I've given it to him, kissed it. Back page of the Western Australian the next day. So I got the please explain from the AFL that day. So they fined me $5,000, the AFL.
Wow.
Because I'd had a history. I also got done for wrestling that day with Darren Glass, and I think we copped a $2,000 or $3,000 fine each. So it cost me $8,000 that game.
Playing, you're paying to play. Yeah. That is awesome. I as you say, if your kids out there, we don't encourage it. I tell you what, I love seeing it. Like you love seeing it. It's great.
Look,
I mean,
at the end of the day, it's a bit of fun.
It's a bit of fun, mate. Yeah, it's a bit of fun. I must say, there's. You know, I think about things behind closed doors. If like a little random PlayStation game, I've seen blokes have huge dummy spits that have some big profiles. But now that's a bit different because they know there's no cameras. Yeah. But I just think you just didn't care, and it's.
Well, I didn't know I was doing it, Tom. Yeah, it was just something took over. Yeah,
and it is right. Like when they question your character and you know things that you know that you pride yourself on, he's got in your head there, hasn't he?
He did. Like,
he got you in the head. But
he could have said anything else, but. He was saying I was underdone.
Yeah.
And I knew it wasn't, you know. That was
And all your teammates can hear it as well. Yeah. So just on that, right? So you've just gone in there and you've been smashed.
Yeah.
You're in the showers and then do you and a few of your best mates go, oh, Richo, I can't believe you gave that bloke a serve? Or you just don't even talk about it?
I reckon you just didn't talk about it until maybe afterwards. But, mate, after a big loss, you know what it's like in the rooms. Yeah.
It's a funeral.
You're disappointed.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next day at recovery, you might have a laugh about it.
Oh, that's great. I think Prez has got me some good mail, but he reckons there might have been a big game against Essendon. You just got smashed and you just had a night away.
We did.
Yeah. And he reckons you just lifted the mood. You thought, oh, I've got to do something here. And
well, yeah, we went. You look back at it, it was a pretty disappointing time for our footy club. Like Robert Walsh was our coach. It was back in 1997. And we'd had a couple of bad losses in a row, but we got towed up at the MCG on a Saturday by Essendon, and the club had already organised a bit of a powwow up at, I think it was up near Mount Buller somewhere, up that way. And it was in the country at like this little sort of resort.
Freezing
sort of thing. Freezing cold. Like this is in the middle of June, July, right? And we've driven up straight after the game. We've all carpooled it up there. We've got up there and, you know, we walked in, we had a few beers and Robert Walls, our coach, walked in and sort of, it was a hard time. Like Wallsy walked in and sort of no one went and spoke to him and it felt shit ass. Anyway, the night moved on and we had a bit of a night and a bit of a powwow. But the next morning we woke up and we realised, because we didn't get up there till dark, and we realised it was a little green, and you could hit off the tee over this little lake onto the green. And the lake was frozen. Like, it had ice across the top. It was absolutely freezing. And Robert Walls was a really good golfer, Wolsey, and he pulled out sort of the pitching wedge, and all the boys are standing around watching. And I said, Wolsey, you can't hit that on. This is our coach. I didn't realise at this point how good a golfer Wolsey was. And he said, if I put it in, you've got to go and jump in that lake and duck dive under. And I said, you won't put it on, Wolsey. Anyway, he's put it within about a foot of the hole. Mate, I jumped in the lake. I was still shivering 2 hours after I got back to Melbourne that day. It was absolute. I broke the ice as I went in.
I reckon it was one of the funniest things.
He wouldn't relent, Wolsey. When he said get in, I sort of went, are you kidding, aren't you, Wolsey? He said get in.
Oh, wouldn't you love to have footage of that these days?
And that's
wow.
The thing. Now you would, because everyone would have been filming it. It would have gone viral.
Oh, yeah. And the ice on top, Frank. And I can just imagine your face. You would have went from this giggly, to like in shock.
Mate, I thought he would have gone, look, don't worry about it. You know, he'd look after me a bit. Mate, it was freezing.
Oh, that is great.
But it wasn't just a millimetre. It was nearly it was fully sheet ice on top.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Brilliant. Anyway. Anything to get the boys up and about. Just speaking of coaches, can you just name all your coaches you had and then I've got a question off the back of it. So when you started?
So I started off with John Northey in 1993. He was a former Richmond Premiership player. Really good player, Swooper Northey. Played in 2 premierships, 67, 69. So he was my first coach from 93 to 95. Then Robert Walls for a couple of years. Then Jeff Geeshan for a couple of years. Then our mate Danny Frawley, the great late Danny Frawley. We had Spud for 5 years. Then Terry Wallace was my last coach.
And out of all those lads, what was the firmest bit of feedback you reckon you got from one of them? Was there a day where you go, wow, that's the biggest spray I've had?
Oh, there was plenty over the time. It's hard to remember specifically.
Yeah.
Wolsey was probably, it was a different time, you know, coaching then. It was that sort of, you get given it, and if you don't sort of survive, you sort of fall by the wayside, whereas now they like to cuddle players and pat them on the back. But, yeah, Wolsey could be pretty direct. I remember we'd have our team meetings up in the GR room, it was called, after the late, great Graham Richmond, who was, you know, a legendary administrator at Richmond, but we'd sit up in the GR room and you looked out over the Nilex clock, and we'd have team meetings on a Monday night, and we'd be still up there at 9 o'clock at night, you know, because we trained at 5 o'clock back in those days. And it was on the old VHS, and, you know, if you didn't put your head over the footy or you ducked in a marking contest, it'd get highlighted in a team meeting. And it was pretty hard to take, you know, watching it. He'd rewind it, he'd pause it, he'd look at you. He'd rewind it back, he'd pause it again, he'd look back at you like that, and he didn't even have to say anything.
Yeah.
It was just that silence of rewind, pause, rewind,
in
pause.
In front of all your best mates,
And it was pretty brutal, but in those times, that's just how they coached, you know. Mm. It was sort of pretty direct feedback, but it could be brutal, and if you didn't know how to take it, I guess, you know, you probably fell by the wayside a little bit, but I do remember sitting up there some nights having to just put up with the pause, and you just got to cop it on the chin.
Yeah, you know? No, it brings
whereas
back
coaches
memories.
Wouldn't do that now. Even if they did, I feel like it would be behind closed doors and it'd be done in a different way.
Yeah. I still reckon it's good showing it sometimes if you want it, because if you show in front of your teammates, you don't want to see it again.
I reckon now it just doesn't really happen that much.
Nah, unless they're getting – I reckon North Melbourne would have been doing it like – around now. I reckon they're going, well, I need to start showing this in front of everyone, because these aren't really.
But I think, I just think more in general, players pretty much to a man, when they've got to go hard, they go hard. Whereas back when I'm talking mid-90s, the game wasn't as scrutinised in the media as much as it is now.
So they were getting away with stuff like that,
there was probably Talking Footy, I reckon, was the first show on a Monday night. That during the week, there was no other content, really.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have Fox Footy, you didn't have AFL 360 on every night. You didn't have all these other shows. There wasn't radio shows every day. So you just didn't probably get scrutinised. Mm. Not even every game was broadcast back in the mid-90s.
Yeah, right. So primetime games are genuinely like, but you'd see boys go, I'm up and about tonight because the TV.
You're playing Friday night. Whereas you're Saturday Arvo at the Western Oval. I remember I kicked 8 out there round 1, 1994. And, like, I'm up and about to see some highlights. There was no coverage
no
that day.
No footage.
There was a news camera there, like one camera like we've got here. So there was a few highlights on the news.
Yeah, right.
But there was no full broadcast of the game.
So you can't even watch your leading patterns or anything?
No, nothing. No behind the goal. So I kicked eight that day, and I still say to this day I took the best mark I've ever taken that day in the goal square over Danny Southern. And there's no footage of it.
Oh, you're kidding.
So no one believes me.
Yeah.
But I reckon it was my best mark, and I'm just spewing there was no one there that day.
Yeah, I'd be flat as well, kicking eight snags.
Yeah, you want to see it.
Yeah, 100%. You did kick a lot of big bags of goals. It's I've got a question here. Like, what's the most complete game you reckon you ever played? Because sometimes you don't kick as many goals as people think at a complete game. I know there's a game you took 21 marks. What's your most complete game you feel like when you sit there and have a beer? And, you know, maybe when the girls are older, you go, oh, this is my best game, girls. Look at this.
I guess probably the day I've kicked 10 against the Dogs one day, and I think we only kicked 14 or 15 goals. So, and we had a win. It was the only day I kicked 10. You know, I had days where I kicked 7, 5 and, you know, should have kicked 10 on days like that, but didn't because I missed some easy ones. But on this day, it sort of all just clicked. I felt like my marking that day was just in sync and I kicked well that day. Just felt like everything clicked. So probably that day, I reckon.
And what do you put it down to? Like, especially, I love this podcast with, you know, greats like yourself and the young guys watching. Like, what do you put it down to, you reckon, for that day at clicking? Were you mentally, like, going well that week? Was your prep was always great? Like, what do you reckon it was?
I reckon kicked a couple of longer goals early, like outside 50, and just they just come off the boot sweetly and went through, and I thought, geez, well, my kicking's on today. And that was always a thing for me. If I miss one early, the little man starts chirping. Little,
right.
And that I never, ever got rid of that. Like right till the end of my career, I just mentally controlling that voice in your head was hard for me. So that day I reckon I kicked a couple, or definitely my first one from about 45 degree right on 50, and it just sort of sweeted off the boot. It sounded good and it went straight. So I thought, oh, hang on, I might be on here. And so the next shot I had was pretty far out as well, and I made good contact again. So I'm feeling good now. And, you know, the voice goes away. You just feel confident. So, and just my marking that day, everything sort of felt like it was clunking in one grab. And I had four mates here from Tassie, which
did ya?
So they'd come over once a year. So they picked this day to come. So I thought, right, we're going to have a few beers tonight too.
So, so it's all just coming together nicely.
And my best mate I was playing against, Benny Harrison. So we knew that night.
Was he playing full back?
He was playing for the Dogs that day in the back line. So there was a bit going on there. He was coming that night for beers as well. It was like the perfect storm.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It's like you need to tee these up if you want to play well. Oh, that's great.
So we couldn't get down to the Swan Hotel quick enough after the game.
I could just imagine the chirp you would have been giving him that night.
All my other mates are giving it to him because they'd been beaten. I kicked my first goal on him. He reckons it wasn't on him. He just had to swap over on the lead.
Hand over, yeah.
Anyway, it was a good day and night.
Oh, that is great. That is I love it. Let's talk about the Brownlow year. We do the live cross every second week with Coons, and I forgot it was that year until he reminded me every week and reminded you every week. Let's talk about it. Yeah. Do you think you were robbed for the Brownlow?
No, I don't, Tommy. If I'm being serious, I reckon I got more votes than I should have that night. I feel like I've had probably two or three better years than that one. Definitely 96, 99, maybe 2001. So I probably, in my own mind, would say probably my fourth best year if you look at your years individually. But I just think it was the fact I was playing on the wing that year. Mm. And just, I don't know, umpires seem to give you votes when you're on ball. Clearly, you know, I'd look at some of the games I didn't get votes for in years before that. You might kick six or seven goals, take 10 or 12 marks and get no votes, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Which is extraordinary. That year I was having 20, 21 touches, maybe 8, 9, 10 marks, kicking a couple of goals, and all of a sudden I'm getting three votes. Mm. So it was purely the fact that I was playing midfield. So, look, once I started getting them though, I thought, well, I'm going to keep getting them. It just seems to be the way it happens. So, yeah, by the end of the night, I was starting to get a bit nervous that maybe I was a chance. But it came down to the last two games of the year. And in my own mind, I knew that they were my worst two games of the year.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. But everyone else in the room doesn't know that, right?
Yeah, right.
So you've got 1,500 people in the room, and I can just feel this sort of energy that people sort of thought that I could win. Because you look at the form guide, right, and in the room they have this form guide and it'll show that Richmond had two Ws the last two games, both games by over 50 points. So people are looking at that going, shit, Richmond have won the last two games. Richardson's been getting votes. Surely he gets some in the last two. So I'm sitting there knowing I'm not getting any. But everyone else thinks I'm going to get votes. So, yeah, I didn't get any and it didn't work out, but it was a fun night.
Oh, that's awesome. Did you have a speech prepared?
No, I didn't because I honestly didn't think I'd get votes. Yeah. Look, I thought I might get 14 or 15, but not into the 20s. So,
what year did you finish up?
The next year. It's I only played five games after
it's
that.
It's amazing how you finished.
It happens quick.
Yeah, but it's amazing how you finished so, like, on top, you know? Yeah. Like, let's just say you win the Brownlow and then you finish the next. Yeah. It's extraordinary. I don't think I've seen many players.
It happened really quickly.
Yeah.
Like, I had a good preseason after that year. I don't reckon I missed a session. It felt good. My body felt really good, but I reckon after the round one game the next year, I just started to feel a bit of tendonitis up in my hammy, up high on my left leg. And it just got worse and worse for the next 5-6 weeks. And then in round six up in Sydney, I tore it off the bone and never played again.
Yeah,
had surgery and never played again.
And when did you start thinking about retirement?
Probably when I did it.
Were you like, I don't know if I've got it in me to keep?
30. I was going to be 35 the next year.
Did you think about how good you were the year before though and go, maybe I've still got more? Or you just kind of, were you just zapped?
I just reckon, I just knew within my body that it was telling me something. I went downhill really quickly from that, as I said, round one to round six and I was cooked.
Mm.
So I just hit the wall really quickly, which people go, oh, why didn't you keep playing? Because they're thinking about the year before.
Yeah.
But within myself, I knew I was cooked.
Yeah, well, it's an amazing career, mate.
Thanks, Tommy.
To do what you did and even just to play wing, I've got a great question. You've got questions coming later. I appreciate everyone that writes in. But Timmy Horn, great mate of mine, he wants me to ask you about Jeremy Cameron and do you think he would win a Brownlow on the wing and do you think he should potentially play more wing? We know he has a bit more of a roaming role.
Anyway, doesn't he?
Yeah. Do you think he could potentially win a Brownlow if he keeps roaming up the field?
Mate, he could. I mean, you watch the – once he gets up to half back and turns around and runs back to goal, good luck.
Mm.
He's 196. He's the same height as me, but he's got more mobility. When he gets up and runs back, he's hard to stop, and he can still kick four or five goals doing that. So, yeah, I think he could, and you never know. As his career goes on, I think the reason I probably ended up going to the wing was, one, Jack Riewoldt was at Richmond, and Terry Wallace – basically wanted me out of the 50.
Really?
Yeah, pretty much. And I understood that.
Was that hard though? Because I read last night you're leading goal kicker pretty much every year your career.
No, not really, because I didn't move up there till round three that year and I wasn't getting a kick early in that season. I'd lost my burst. I couldn't get off my man. Whereas up on the wing, I probably didn't need that pace. You just needed to be able to run all day. So that little bit of burst that I'd lost, which was important inside 50 on the lead, wasn't as important up on the wing. You just had to keep going all day up there, and I could still do that. So I understood why, and he'd needed Jack to develop, and I was probably demanding too much of the ball in there and not getting it. So it was a good move. So I reckon as Cameron gets further into his career, if you lose a little bit of burst, you can still run all day up on the wing. So
and he's a great tank as well.
Yeah, he could. Yeah,
yeah. No, it's a great question from Horny, and I just thought I'd ask you. Let's go to before I get to what your toughest opponent in your career. Let's just stay in the forward line. Who is someone that you really had a tough time on?
Probably Glenn Archer.
Yep,
I did beat him a few times, but he beat me probably more than I beat him. But just how ferocious he was. And you could get away with more then, as we were talking about before. You know, the old ear massage. As Danny Frawley called him, the old ear massage. So after you marked it, you could really make him earn it on the way down.
The ear massage.
And believe me, Arch made you earn him. He could fall on top of you as you came down. And,
you know, imagine how sloppy he'd be after the contest.
Really sloppy. Knee to the rib cage, and you could get away with it.
And he's hard as nails, so you pre-game would know you're in for a big day as well.
If you met Arch now, if he walked in here, and I don't know if you've met him, but lovely man.
Yeah.
Yeah, mild-mannered, great to talk to.
They're always like that, aren't they, the hard bastards? Like, they're just...
Mate, as soon as he crossed that line, he was an absolute lunatic. Mate, his eyes, you could just... You looked at his eyes and they just something.
Yeah.
So if you got a kick on Archie, you knew you'd had a good day. So I really enjoyed playing on him because you knew if you got a kick, you earned it. So he was probably one. I could never get a kick on Max Hudgson from St Kilda.
He was a great player. Wasn't
really
he?
Quick on the lead. And Presty from Collingwood. Simon Presty G. Yep. Como. Yep. I'll never forget one day we were playing the Pies at the G and I was playing on Presty. I knew I had Presty. Back then you knew who you were getting. And our coach, Danny Frawley, was going through each name on the board, you know, and he gets to me and he goes, "Oh, Richo, look who you've got today." And I'm looking at it going, I'm thinking, yeah, Presty, who I can't get a kick on. And Spud's looking at me going, "Look at who you've got today. Presta G, a slow-mo," he goes. And I'm thinking, he's not that slow, Danny. So anyway, he's hitting the board and he's going, "Presta G, a slow-mo." And he thought it was funny, Spud, and he had a bit of a laugh. And I'm thinking, this isn't funny, right? I can't get a kick on this guy. So the very first centre bounce, we win a centre clearance. I can't remember who won it, but it was a perfect pass. I had a bit of space. I'm coming out on a lead. Presty's behind me. I've got the arms out ready to take it. Presty runs straight past me and punches it away. And I'm thinking, how bloody slow does Spud think I am now? Presty, yeah. Slow-mo's gone past me.
Mate, Spud is – I never got to really spend much time with him, but I always say to BT, I used to love as a kid listening to Triple M. Like I would prefer to listen on the radio – than almost watch.
Yeah.
But if I could, if they had the technology to merge Triple M and then all, and I don't know what it was, Spud made me laugh more than anyone. And even stories, I just, it just sounds like they're one of the greatest men.
Mate, what you would find you were doing with Spud would be you'd be laughing at Spud, laughing at himself.
Yeah.
Because even if Spud's stories weren't funny, he thought they were.
Yeah.
So then you'd be laughing at him, laughing at his own shit story.
Oh, even
he's
like,
infectious, man.
Oh, yeah. Like even when he's stitching someone up and he knows that they've caught on and he starts laughing.
Well, you can see him getting excited at his own story.
Yeah.
Mate, what you guys do now with your content and you're filming it and, mate, he would have been brilliant at that.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, even on the bounce, I used to watch that.
They didn't film stuff then, did they, the content?
Yeah. But on the bounce, I used to love watching that. Like, I didn't like consuming AFL content when I was playing, but I used to love the bounce. So because I just thought he just to stir up, you know, the chief and just took the piss, didn't he? Yeah. And that's why when you tell these stories about him being a coach, I find it fascinating because, you know, he had a few dummy spits in the box as well, didn't
he? He did. Yeah, look, he was – that. I think that's why I loved Danny because I think – we were similar in some way that, you know, he wore his heart on his sleeve as well. Mm. I mean, I remember in his first year, one day someone, the old member stand at the MCG, the doors from the box, you could open the coach's box door up and hang out and, like, give it to people in the crowd. And someone in the crowd on this particular day, and you might be able to find the vision, kept turning around and, like, giving it to the box. And Danny could see this guy, and I reckon by late in the game he'd had enough. Danny opened up the coach's box, came out and was giving it to this bloke in the crowd.
I've seen it on the – I used to play it all the time. Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, you just wouldn't get that these days. Oh, obviously, they can't open the box like they could then.
Well,
but
they'd have security on the box, and there'd be someone in the – there'd be security in the crowd stopping the guy in the crowd. Like, it was a bit rawer back then.
Prestige slow-mo's hilarious. Yeah. Any other funny Danny Frawley stories?
Oh, mate, probably the one I find – the funniest, and I don't know, it might have been told before, but Dave Roden, who we all love, beautiful man, Dave, and killing it now as a goal umpire. Mm. He
one of the best goal umpires, mind you. I don't think he ever reviews it.
No, he just backs himself
he does,
in.
Doesn't
he?
Yeah.
That's another story.
Yeah, but we won't talk about that. We've done that to Dash on you.
But early in his time at Richmond, he was a young guy, and he just had a habit of just being a little bit late, right, D-Rod? And this is only probably in the first month of his career at Richmond. Anyway, this preseason, Danny Frawley had this thing, and I think he got it from, it might have been from the NBA or NFL, but he called it Tiger Time. So Tiger Time was 5 minutes before the actual time. So if you had a team meeting at 11 a.m, Tiger Time was 10:55, right?
Yeah.
So therefore, you would never be late. And I think, is it in the NFL? Was it Belichick or someone?
I'm not sure. We were talking about the same thing. Yeah. Fred, if you're not five early, you're five late was the call. And I was always late.
It's definitely from an American sport that Spud picked it up from. Anyway, D-Rod kept being late. He was never on Tiger Time, right? So after probably his third or fourth time, Spud said, "That's enough." So we're training this particular day out on Punt Road, and D-Rod rolled up late. So Danny took him inside, and what he'd done was he'd got about 8 or 9 watches, like the GPS watches that we had back then, and he took D-Rod in, And he took him into his office and he made D-Rod put five watches on each arm. So we're out training and we're all out on the track and we sort of knew what was happening. And D-Rod comes running back down the ropes like this and he's got 10 watches on five on each arm. Can you imagine the boys out of
and
So D-Rod's had to train the whole day with 10 watches.
That's outstanding.
I can still see it now.
I've never heard of that before. No, and I've never heard of anyone else even doing like two watches.
Yeah, mate.
That's harmless, isn't it? Like it's harmless, but very, very
Danny
funny.
Danny just knew that it was going to get the whole boys up. I can see it. And I can see Danny walking down the race after him, just pissing himself up.
See, that's great. Instead of like being vicious and, you know, boys go to St Kilda Beach, he just takes the piss out of
him. It had an impact.
Yeah.
But it got everyone up as well. Yeah. It makes me cry thinking about it.
I would just love to see. And he's only a first-year player, was he, D-Rod? Just coming out with 10 watches. Was he coming out on the lead and everything with the watch?
Like coming out in lane work. Like.
Oh, fuck. Do you have any footage, like any photos of him?
That's the other thing now. Yeah. The social media team wouldn't get that. Mate, that's got me.
Oh, yeah, mate, he's...
But I'm thinking about Danny's face.
Yeah, because I could just imagine him just about to piss himself. Yeah. Like, oh, the boys are going to love
it. He made D-Rod like sprint down the
race. What, he's letting his son sprint down to the boys and get out on the bike.
Get out on the track. Oh, mate.
Oh, fuck, that is gold, man. Yeah. I've never heard that one before.
Yeah, that's a true story. There's no Mayo on that.
No, that is, and that's what I mean. Like, I've never met Danny, and I just, he's just one of the greats. You can just tell he's.
And, mate, there's probably, I can't remember him, but there's many, many stories like that.
I'm sure you'd remember when all the boys are together, you'd bring them all up.
I mean, the chicken manure one was famous as well, where we had the loss at the MCG on a Friday night, got absolutely towed up, and the Richmond supporter dumped, you know, a ton of chicken manure in front of the gym door. Have you heard that?
No, I haven't heard that one.
It's a pretty common story, but basically this guy was saying we played like shit. So this guy had like a chicken farm or something. So Spud, after we left training, Spud got the trainers and all the property guys to bag it all up and put it on his rose bushes down at his property and had the best roses in Brighton.
So he's turned into a positive.
Yeah,
old Spud.
Into a positive.
Speaking of funny stories, I've got a good mate from Riddles Creek, Timmy Rousel, and I asked the Aces to write in and write a few questions, and he goes, "Oh, Tommy boy, I haven't actually got a question for you, mate, but he just mentioned that asked Richo about his 200th game, and I go, oh, I will. So the story goes, he reckons, and you can tell me if this is true or false, but it was his 200th game, and he's his old man's really good mates with one of the boys at the footy club, and he's teed up Timmy as a young kid to go down and run out with you for your 200th game.
That happens,
And anyway, apparently your sister was around. I don't know whether she's in the stands, and then she had kids as well. And the story goes, she's gone to you. Why the fuck are you running out with this kid and not my kids? Because you didn't have kids at the time. Yeah. And then you turned to her and said, I don't know who the fuck this kid is. And she was filthy. And I go, I'm going to ask the great man. And I've actually got a photo. I'll show you afterwards. But she got it just here. But there's the photo there of you and Timmy. But do you remember this day? And do you remember having this chat? I think it was Opie.
Mark Opie.
Opie's really good.
I reckon I can see Mum in the background there.
Yeah. So Timmy Rousel, great man from Riddles Creek, a very funny man as well. That's him in the picture, which is the lucky running out in your 200th game. And, Opie's just rolled your sister.
It just would never have occurred to me to run out with kids, right?
Yeah.
I think I was probably old school. Look, we know how BT, he hates extra people on the ground, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He hates you getting chaired off. He hates kids on the ground. He just wants the players out there only. I don't know, probably coming through the 90s, I probably thought that way as well. So it would never have occurred to me to get my own nieces to come out, which would have been the way to do it, wouldn't it? So that did happen.
I don't know who the fuck this kid is.
I'd no idea. No one even – in situations like that, you just sort of run out and someone goes, oh, this kid was just suddenly there and I didn't even know who he was and he's run out. Got my own poor nieces there who should have been coming out.
Oh, well, it was a memory that Timmy will never forget. Yeah. He's a good man.
We had a win that day, I think. I think it was Port Adelaide. Was that at Marvel Stadium?
Yeah, I think it was. We were looking it up last night.
I am hopeless at remembering games, individual games.
Milestones
as well. Got asked on the weekend. We were at the Hawks-North game on the weekend. It was Nick Larkey's 100th game.
Yep.
And Tim Lane, Larkey kicked a goal at one point. Tim Lane goes, oh, Richo, can you remember your 100th game? I've got no memory of it. But then Tony Shaw looked up my stats and I'd had 8 touches and didn't kick a goal. So you're not going to remember that.
No, you're not going to.
And we lost the game.
Oh, yeah. No, you just put that in the back of the mind, don't you? That's very fun. Oh, that's great. I told Timmy I'd ask you that. While we keep going, fondest memories as a player at the Tigers?
Well, probably 2001, Tommy. I only played in one final series, which is pretty sad when you think about it, 16, 17 years. But 2001 under Danny Frawley, we had a really good year. We made a prelim final. Played Brisbane up in Brisbane. They went on to win the next 3 premierships.
Oh, yeah, so, super team, yeah.
Mate, if we played them at the G that day, you never know. We might have got close because we had beaten them during the year at the G. But beating Carlton in the semi-final that year, so we beat the enemy, Carlton. We sing the song, my only finals win that I played in. Didn't have a huge game, but, you know, just to play in a winning final on the G was pretty memorable. But what made that week just bizarre was that was the week of the September 11 attack in New York.
Oh, yeah.
And mate, it was the weirdest time, you know, to be playing footy. So I remember being at training at Punt Road, trying to prep up for a big final. And obviously what happened. And, you know, we'd be out on the track and you'd be running straight in off the track, watching the news in the gym, just to see what was going on in New York and the world. And, you know, everyone sort of knew someone that had a relative in New York. So it was pretty, you know, it was a pretty brutal experience to go through. And as the week wore on, you know, you're trying to get up for a final, but you sort of, sport was irrelevant at that time. But as the week wore on, you felt like, oh, actually it might bring people back together. But then even on the game day, there was this sort of bit of paranoia going to the ground.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of people in a confined space like the MCG. And there was that paranoia about terrorism and, you know, people were worried about probably even being there that day. So with the security and it wasn't going to happen, but it was in the back of your mind.
Yeah, because we're all human, aren't you? And it's the same. Yeah, it's a lot to take in and then go focus on a massive final that you hadn't played in.
So in a way, it probably took your mind off the game. You probably weren't sort of worrying about the game. Anyway, we had a win and we go up to Brisbane the next week to play in the prelim. And the weird part about the next week was that Ansett collapsed.
Oh,
so then there were no flights to get up to Ansett Airlines. You mightn't even know of them.
Nah, dude, because mum worked at Ansett Simulator Centre, so I was all over it.
So then Ansett collapsed, and then none of our supporters could get up there. They're trying to get buses. So, mate, it was a weird few weeks, but memorable because it was the only finals that I played in. Yep. And we loved Danny, and he just brought the group together, and it was just a good time.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Nah, it's good. There's nothing like probably winning a final, is there? Now that you're much older and wiser like they are and as everyone is when they get older, is there anything that you would change if you were to go back in time? A lot of people sometimes say, nah, I learn a lot. I did what I did. Or would you go back now knowing a few things and change maybe one thing?
Yeah, it probably would be a bit of the body language stuff because it wasn't a great – it's funny now watching it and you look at it and we have a bit of a laugh and you go, oh, Richo, you're a peanut or whatever, but – it did probably at times have a pretty negative effect on teammates and I probably wasn't aware that it could hurt your teammates because, you know, I probably was a senior player in the team and probably should have been setting a better example. So I wouldn't change being an emotional player, but at times directing stuff at teammates wasn't right. And I realised that now. And even at the time I knew it was wrong, but I just couldn't stop myself. It was like I was possessed, something took me over. By the end of my career, as I said before, I'd got better at putting it in a positive way and I played my most consistent footy in my last 5 years because of that. Didn't play my best footy, but was just more consistent from week to week, which I think had to do with not being on that emotional roller coaster as much.
Yeah, well said. And you wouldn't have had sports psychs back then?
We did, but not to the point that we do now.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. You probably every now and then had the ability to chat to someone, but you know, not full time like you do now.
It's a bit different when your body language coach is Brian Taylor. I couldn't believe this when I did a bit of research last night, listened to a couple of pods, did a bit of, I don't like to do too much because I don't want to bore myself when I get the answers, but I just, it came across the ears and I went, no way VT was your body language coach. I mean, I know he's a great goal kicking coach.
Short-lived body language coach.
What would VT be delivering the great after a training session or a game? What was his feedback?
Quick, sort of long story short, Terry Wallace pulled me in sort of right when he took over coaching, and that was when I sort of started changing. I actually did a course away from the club, a leadership course on my own, which I did for 6 months, and that actually helped me harness it in a more positive way. Terry, the club didn't even really know that I was doing that, so Kane Johnson, my ex-teammate, put me onto it. But anyway, I walked in one day and Plough said, mate, we've got to sort out this body language. You know, do you want to be captain of Richmond? And at that point, you know, we were changing captain and I wanted to be captain. I wanted to put my hand up to be captain. I didn't end up getting it. Kane didn't. He was the right choice, Kane Johnson. But I said, yeah, I do. I'd like to be. He said, well, you've got to get this body language stuff under control. And I said, mate, I've been trying to do it for years. I just don't know what I can do, you know. I've tried everything, meditation, yoga, trying to calm myself down before games. And he said, well, I've got something for you. I've got you a body language coach. I said, body language coach? Didn't even know you get one. Have you ever heard of that? So I said, yeah, let's do it. You know, when can we start? And he said, well, he's here today. I said, now? He said, yeah, he's outside, sitting outside. So we were in the gym at Punt Road. I walked out, walked down the race, and I sort of looked to my left and right, and there was no one sitting there. And I looked down across to where the old social club was. There was no one there. I'm like, there's no one here. And then I turned around and looked back up into the Jack Dyer stand. I was standing in the race. I look up. Brian Taylor was there, BT. I said, what are you doing here, BT? He goes, I'm your body language coach. And that was it. And all I could think about was all that BT stuff, you know, when he's getting a player around on the mark and, you know, all this. Yeah. So I reckon we gave it 2 weeks and we were sitting there one day in the video room, it was DVD stuff back then. And we put the DVD in and we're watching my game and BT was meant to give me highlights and lowlights or whatever. Something had happened in the game and I'd given away a free kick and sort of BT was trying to talk me through it. And we looked at each other and just burst out laughing. And BT said, this isn't working, is it? And I said, no. And that was the end of it.
That's great, isn't
That's
it?
That's a true story.
I feel like it should have been told earlier. Yeah, I don't know. It's a great story.
I reckon Plough thought we were still working together. We just didn't do it.
Oh, that is great. That sounds like you're just giving BT another little cashy.
I don't know if he got paid for it, but just knowing BT now, he would have got something.
We love our Amy Clangers here, you know, big sponsor of this show, and we can't thank them enough. For everyone out there, they've got the clanger for, you know, in the community. So if you've got a clanger, head to Amy and submit your clanger for your chance to win $15,000. All brought to you by our friends Amy. Mate, an Amy clanger, we've all had heaps of clangers. Yeah. Mine one's famous, you know, but you've got a few as well. Now, commentary, playing, you tell us one we can marry footage up with and we'll run with it. But what would be Richo's Amy clanger?
Oh, look, I think a good one on the ground, and it was against Sydney at the MCG years ago, and you might be able to find the footage. I think it's probably pretty easy to find. I used to like to wear a fair bit of grippo on my hands, you know, for my marking.
Yeah.
But it's a fine line.
Yeah.
Right? Did you wear it when you played?
Yeah, like I sometimes didn't like it because I couldn't guide the ball down.
That's the reason, right? But for a marking player, you know, that little bit of tackiness, it just helped with a bit of one grab stuff. And, you know, and we can't wear gloves like the American football. Those things are ridiculous, by the way.
Yeah.
You can see why they can take the one hand as Odell Beckham. He doesn't take that day with just you know, nothing on.
No, they're sticky as.
So this particular day, it was probably pretty early in the game, I reckon. I just had too much grippo on. I took the mark, and as I went back, I'm, you know, lining up. I was only, I reckon the man on the mark might have been Leo Barry, Roberts Thompson. I'm not sure. But they're probably in the square, right? I'm kicking from the top of the square directly in front. You can't miss from here, really. But as I'm coming in, there was a bit of breeze as well coming across. So in my head, the little man's going, shit, there's some breeze here left or right, coming across this way. So I'm thinking that. And then as I'm coming in, I'm like, shit, there's also too much grip on my hand here. I'm in a bit of trouble. So as I went to kick it, I reckon I've almost had to like throw it down like that to get it off my hand. I've clipped the right on the inside of my, it's nearly gone off at right angles out on the full. Right? I just had to laugh. You could see the Sydney boys sort of laughing. So that day I learnt, just get the grip
over,
right?
Up on the grip.
Yeah, I wasn't a great kick anyway, so I didn't need that. So that was probably one on the ground. I had one a few weeks ago, either a gather round. I think it was the Dogs Bulldogs game. No. It was the Port Adelaide game on the Friday night.
Against Essendon?
Yeah, that was
yep.
It. Yeah.
Blowout.
Yeah, yeah, Benny Mackay was playing on Charlie Dixon. And I was talking about Mackay, thinking he'd done a pretty good job. And I'm sort of going, and Dixon, you know, Dixon hasn't taken a mark yet, I've said. And then I'm like, as I'm saying it, you can sort of hear me slowing down because I'm saying hasn't taken a mark yet. I go, no, actually, I can remember him taking a couple. But I'm looking at the stats and it's saying zero on the stats. And I'm like, no, Dixon hasn't taken a mark today. But then I realise I'm reading the wrong column. And I look across and he has taken two or three marks. And anyway, the commentary will explain it. I just thought, I've got to try and keep going here. And I just kept digging myself a hole, and then BT yeah. chipped in, and yeah, it was pretty funny.
That's great. Yeah, you would have looked like tackles or something. And
yeah, I was looking at something.
And you
else.
Do you have the producer in year, like Richard?
No,
is
no
that,
one was sort
oh,
of
no one saved you.
Normally, you got a stats man there who might have saved me, but I was just paddling, you know, upstream, and I just couldn't get out of it. And it was the audio says it all.
And it's not easy live TV. Nah. When you're
no
live,
one
you
was
can
give me a chop out around me. I was sort of looking at Hodgie, I reckon, thinking he might give me a chop out. JB's just staring straight ahead. And then Brian, of course, he didn't give me a chop out.
He would have wanted you to keep going.
He just
Bruce.
Sort of said, and Richo, you're going nowhere here.
He does stir the pot, mate, doesn't he, in the box?
You just know you're dying and you know how shit it's going to sound.
Oh, that's great. Well, yeah, there's a couple of great Amy clangers. Appreciate you sharing them. Like we said, guys, if you've got some clangers at home, send them in for your chance to win $15,000. What about you? Before we wrap up the footy chat and we get to some questions from the Aces and a bit of off-season travel and some stories, but who was your biggest bunny? Now that you're not playing anymore, it's a bit of a ruthless one, but who was someone when you go, yeah, had a field day on this bloke, and the stats don't lie?
I don't like doing this, and I would never say I had a bunny because I never played on anyone enough to probably say that. If you beat someone once, they're not a bunny.
Yeah.
And I think over the course of time, if you play on anyone five or six times, you know, you're probably going to get beaten at least once. Playing forward, it's a lot of things that go into it. So I wouldn't say a bunny, but there was one night at the MCG where I walked out, and I reckon Wellman and guys like that were still playing. And I was thinking probably I'm getting Wellman, or, you know, Fletch might have even still been out there, or he would have been out there. So I'm probably prepping up for one of those two in my mind. And I walked out, and with all due respect, I didn't think Kepler Bradley would come to me, right? And this was the only time I played on him. So he wasn't my bunny. I'll get that across, Tommy. I don't like saying that.
Oh, I love Kepler as well.
Yeah, he's a good man. But anyway, I get there and I'm like, all right. Well, suddenly I started feeling all right. You know, I'm thinking, shit, there's Fletcher over there and Wellman or whoever else was out there. And I walk in at quarter time and I got four goals, right? And I'm feeling really good by this stage. So I'm thinking that's the end of Kepler though, right? I'm starting to think Wellman or Fletcher again. I walk out and Kepler's still standing there. So I'm like, all right, this is going well. I'm thinking, all right, we'll keep this going. So at halftime I had six. So again, at halftime I'm really starting to look at Fletcher now or Wellman. I walk back out after three-quarter time. I'm standing deep in the goal square, and by then I'm getting everyone else up, right, because I'm feeling like I'm having a good day. And back then you could dictate things a little bit
more. Get out of the way, boys.
Well, there wasn't as much structure then, and this was my day, right? So I'm standing there, and Bradley comes towards me again to start the third. So I'm like, this is bloody unbelievable. So now we walk in at three-quarter time and I've got eight. So I'm eyeing a double figures return here by this stage, but I'm thinking it's not going to happen because surely Fletcher or Wellman come to me for the last quarter. I walk out at the start of the last quarter and Kepler stayed there for the whole day.
Oh, that is amazing.
And I've now worked out perhaps that Essendon didn't want to win that game. If you look at the ladder position.
What did you kick for the day?
I kicked 9-6.
Oh, you just missed the 10 that game.
Yeah, I missed the 10. I got ahead of myself a bit in the last quarter. But had 19 marks, and I really thank Kevin Sheedy for that day.
And I think from memory, Kepler was he young? He was really
he was
young
only
then.
Young, yeah.
Yeah, just giving him a lesson.
And mate, I was probably, you know, in your I was prime? In my 30, early 30s then, and yeah. You know.
Yeah. Oh, that is funny.
But I reiterate, he wasn't, I only played on him once. There were yeah. No bunnies.
I can't wait to get Kepler on. I've got great stories about Kep.
Good
yeah,
man.
Played with him at Freo. He's one of the funniest guys yeah. I've met and had in the locker room. And yeah. He's got the serious job now. I think he's still at Claremont and he's the GM there. But he is one of the funniest guys yeah. I've had in a locker room. And just hearing that story.
And back then there was no zoning defence either. So when you were probably getting beaten like that, you weren't getting any help from your teammates.
Nah, no roll-off, was there?
Nah.
Yeah.
I mean, the back pockets and back flankers are yeah. arm across. You just worry about that yourself.
Yeah.
Whereas now you'd get support. It just wouldn't happen now.
The big
know?
Fridge. Far out. Yeah. That's funny. I've got some funny story. I think there was a day where he kept missing goal and right. He finally kicked one and he was getting Bronx cheered almost. and he kicked one and he gave the crowd a bit and all the crowd, like, you could hear him giggling and cheering and laughing. Yeah. And then they cut to him on the bench and I think Ross Lyons getting an absolute serve. You know, they go like camera of the box and then they go down to the bench and he's just got the phone and he's just like, oh yeah, yeah, and then just puts it down. Nah. And then he would tell the story in the showers later and you'd be all crying. Like, he's just that funny.
I've heard he's a really good guy. I don't know him, but yeah.
Oh no, you'd love him. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant, mate. Oh, very good, very good. Well, let's get to off-season travel. I know you love your off-season, you know, like you love traveling. You've been all around the world. I've got some great dirt here, but you love your US sport because we love it here.
Yep. Yeah, I do. I like all sport. I mean, been lucky enough to get to a fair bit of it over my time. I remember going to the old Wembley Stadium and watching Arsenal and Barcelona in a European Championship game, and just sitting there with all the Arsenal fans and, you know, the chance that they got going. That was a great memory, the old Wembley. Been to, you know, plenty of NFL footy, the college footy in America. Went to a few uni games there, so that was good fun. NBA, ice hockey,
love
so,
it all. Yeah.
Yeah, just love it.
Yeah, you like me? That's great. Yeah,
I still to this day though go. You know, I've been to plenty of international. There's no better game than Australian rules football.
Nah.
I don't care what anyone says.
And it's hard to explain like to Americans what it's like. You just got to kind of show them.
Well, you got to grow up with it as well. Mm. It's a pretty. If you roll up and watch an Aussie rules game, you don't know what's going on, do you?
Whereas, nah.
I think basketball's a global game. You know what's going on. Even NFL, once you know the rules, it's a pretty structured game.
I reckon the PlayStation game helped me as a kid, and then you get into it. When I think I got into it, was like 23, 24. You're right.
Once you get to understand all the downs and all the rules, it's a good game. But I still think Aussie rules is the best game.
I still reckon that America would eat this game up.
If you grow up with it.
Even just streaming. Like, you know how you can just watch so much sport now? I reckon if they had it on over there, like just the prime time games, like Anzac Day and, you know, even opening game, you know, Richmond Carlton and whatever. Yeah. I just feel like they see all those people in the stands and go, what is this?
Yeah.
Because everyone I've spoken to, they love it.
I think also NFL for me, it's better on TV. Yeah, I like going live, but I think you need to see all the replays, because when you're up in the bleachers in the States, you can't really see all the blocking and what's going on on the offensive and defensive line. So I think it's a better game on TV than live, but I think
well said.
I think our game takes the cake.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest and one of the hardest, people don't realise. Got some good stories here. I think one of my favourite ones is this Byron Bay trip. There's a rumour going around, it's pretty strong, I think, that you were the pin-up boy, and the chairman at the time must have been running Nissan, and you used to have a Nissan Pathfinder, and it was, you know, the boys thought it was the grouse, so... Yeah. There was three lads that took it up
then,
to...
Back then, Tommy, the players weren't earning the salaries that they weren't.
Yeah, it wasn't your G-Wagons and all that from Mercedes. And
a lot of Commodores in in the car.
Anyways, you had the grouse. They said Richo had the best car, and we thought, oh, well, we might take Richo's car up to Byron because we're not going to fly, we're going to drive. And apparently, I don't think you were on the trip at the time.
No, I wasn't on the trip, but three or four of my teammates, Wayne Campbell, Ashley Prescott, who obviously you had a smooth, one of the great men, smooth, by the way, and Nick Daffy.
Yeah.
So those guys were heading up to Byron Bay and they were driving up, and it was sort of planned at short notice, this trip at the end of the year. They just thought we'll get up to Byron for a weekend, basically. And no one had a four-wheel drive. You know, everyone had a pretty small car, and, you know, they wanted to take up a few, you know, I think at the time, a few of them thought they were going to be surfers and all this sort of thing. So a few surfboards went on the trip. I had the Nissan Pathfinder, the brand new grouse one from Nissan, because our president, Leon Daphne, was the CEO of Nissan. So the boys rang me and said, can we borrow the Pathfinder? And I was a bit nervous to lend it to them because I didn't own the car.
Yeah.
I was just given the car as a bit of an ambassador type role. Anyway, in the end, I was reluctant, but I gave them the car. And they were only going up for 3 nights. Anyway, they leave on the Thursday or whatever, and they're coming back on the Monday, and they get back. And they're all back in Melbourne, and I catch up with them, and my car is not with them. I said, where's my car? And they said, look, we've had a big weekend. We couldn't be bothered driving home. I said, but where's my car? They said, oh, they've paid some dudes, that were young blokes up in Byron that they met up there at the pub. They've paid these guys to drive my car back to Melbourne. I said, what do you mean, drive my car back to Melbourne? So about 3 days later, I'm without a car at this point, right? I've got no car to drive. About 3 days later, my car rolls back. These three blokes have driven it back. There's fluffy dice on the rear vision mirror. There's a couple of choice stickers on the back window of the car, and they've just dropped it off at my house.
Yeah. Oh, unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
They reckon he was a big richo man, and they go, well, do you want to drive his car back?
Yeah, these dudes have driven by. I bumped into a few of those lads years later, and they said, we were the dudes that drove your car back from Byron Bay.
Oh, Evan Fraser, I can't believe we did that. Yeah. It's a great story. It's almost mate, harmless because the car come back.
Yeah, it came back and everything was okay, but mate, you know what it's like after one of those sort of weekends at the end of the year. They've had three big nights. The last thing you feel like doing is driving, basically 24-hour drive, isn't
it? Yeah, and they said it was a bit bumpier than they first thought on the way up there. What about the one in Bali? They reckon there was a big Bali trip and you're in Iluwatu maybe and they thought, the big fella might just get the chest waxed and then just all went pear-shaped. You reckon that was a great time?
Yeah, it did. We went over to Uluwatu one day. And this is, if you go to Bali now, it is so built up there. You got the 5-star hotels, but this is 1994 or 5. There was nothing around at Uluwatu. It was basically just a surfing camp back then. And we had a few lads like the Gale brothers that were good surfers, you know, Michael and Brendan Gale, a few other lads that wanted to get out surfing. So we've got the, hired the little van to take us over to Uluwatu and we get over there and there's nothing there basically. It's just a little camp. And there's a few locals over there that are a bit entrepreneurial down on the beach doing massages. And I can't surf. And that it's a reef there, so I'm definitely not going out.
Yeah.
If it was a little bit of sand underneath, maybe. So I thought, I'm just going to chill back here, get a nice massage and whatever. So I'd shaved down before we went to Bali just to try and look a bit better.
You look leaner when you got the hair off the chest.
I'm pretty hairy, so I've trimmed up. So that wasn't going too well anyway. You know, the pores have opened up a bit with the shave down. So then I've had the full body massage on the beach and fallen asleep and had the rub there and whatever oil that they then rubbed on me just didn't agree with me. I've broken out in a full body rash about an hour later, right? Just ruined the whole trip with Bali. I am a rash from my toenails to my hairline. Every part of my body is rashed.
Even the head.
Everything. Because I fell asleep. They're massaging my face and my hair. I don't know what oil it was, but it didn't agree with me. Ruined my trip. I couldn't leave the room.
Yeah, it wouldn't be able to get. And that was like the footy trip, wasn't it?
I just had to stay in my room.
The boys reckon they could not look at you. They just kept.
And it wasn't just a rash. It was like welts. Like,
it
wasn't good.
Oh, far out. That is the old Iluwatu dodgy Balinese massages. Oh, very good. I know you got to go shortly, so I thought I'd just quickly get into some questions. While I'm getting into the questions, can you just talk to me about your transition when you finished footy? It was as I said, Brownlow, almost like a Brownlow year, and then the hammy goes ping, and then you've hung them up at 35, 280 games, I think it was. Yeah. You know, you've kicked like the 11th most goals ever at the time. How was your
homework?
Yeah. How was your? But how was the transition? Because you know, I've spoken to a lot of players, and a lot of players struggle with, you know, the lack of routine and being told what to do, and there's no more like, you know, you're trying to become a premiership player every year and every day and every moment, and then you don't have it anymore. How was your transition? I know you're in media, but how was it?
Yeah, it was probably going into my last year there, Tommy, You know, I thought I was going to play till I was 38. You know, I'd had a good year. We talked about that before. Had a good year, had a good preseason. Coming into 2009, I'm thinking, you know, I've got a few more years left here. So I wasn't really thinking about my transition out of footy. So it happened really quickly for me. I was injured in round six that year, pinged my hammy, surgery. And in my own mind, I knew that I was done. I wasn't going to play again that year. And I just thought, geez, rehabbing this, coming back, I'm done. So I rang my manager, Ricky Nixon, at the time, and I said, Chicken, what am I going to do here, mate? I reckon I'm done at the end of the year. I was contracted. I was out of contract. I said, what am I going to do? He said, what about I try and get you a little bit of media work? And back then it was probably harder to find than what it is now. You know, there's more outlets now to probably find some media work. But anyway, he come back to me. I got a few guest spots on Channel 10 doing special comments. And a few guest spots on 3RW. Players are doing it now. Like we've got Jack Silvani on AW. Tommy Mitchell did it a few weeks ago. Back then it was probably harder. So I was lucky that Ricky got those jobs for me. Anyway, I did that. I ended up enjoying it. And yeah, I was just lucky that at the end of the year, they rang and said, do you want to give it a go next year? And I was able to start working in the media. So I got lucky in a way. My injury helped me get my media work because, you know, I had nothing to do for the rest of the year but rehab. And I put my toe into the water and lucky enough I got some gigs. I was pretty ordinary at it. I mean, they just throw you in the deep end.
They don't give you much training.
I mean, if you go back and look now, I was horrible. I don't know how I got a job.
But everyone's horrible at something when they start, let's be honest.
Yeah, you just, mate, it really is. They just throw you in front of the camera and it's sink or swim and you just got to learn and get moving.
Yeah, there you go. And did you struggle with the fact you weren't playing? Like, you know, because like I said, you're not at the peak, but you just come off one of the top four years.
Probably tired.
Yeah.
I was sick of rehab. I'd had a lot of injuries in my career. I missed a lot of footy, you know, with injury and I just was done with being injured.
Yeah.
And I thought, if I come back and get injured again, I'm finished. So mentally I was drained as well. So to me it was actually a relief to retire at the end of that year.
Yeah.
Knowing that I had some work to go into, which made it easier.
100%. Knowing it was a bad injury.
Yeah.
Well said, mate. It's great to see you kicking on. What are you, 13, 14 years now in there?
Yeah, been lucky.
Yeah, it's
some
great.
People still think I'm shit ass, Tommy.
Nah, mate. Mate, everyone, not enough love in this world. But I feel like, and sometimes you do it now. You said, yeah, I just had a pot shot at North Melbourne before. I didn't mean to be too rude, but just they haven't won a game yet. But you do get a bit harsh sometimes instead of, you forget how hard it is. And,
mate, it's a hard game. And I think if I could give any advice to anyone is, don't forget that, I reckon.
Yeah.
You know, I think as the further into retirement you get, you look down and you go, oh, why didn't he kick it there? Or why did he do that? Pressure's never been greater in the game. It's never been harder to be able to hit a target with the pressure you're under. So you just got to remind yourself at times how tough a game it is to play.
Yeah, well said. All right, let's get to some quick questions here. What is the best day at the races you've ever had from Tommy Dow?
Whoa.
Big Cho.
Oh, I'm not a punter, to be honest. I'll go to the Spring Carnival and take $20 and if I lose it, that's it. Probably my most memorable day at the races, you know, Kane Pettifer, the P-Train, who's one of my best mates.
A few stories here about the P-Train.
P-Train doesn't mind seeing his name up in lights. You know, he likes these bright lights, right? He likes to be in front of him, right? So we rock up to the races, I think it was 2 years ago, and lucky, we got invited into the Furphy marquee, who I'm lucky enough to do a bit of work for occasionally, and I took the P-Train as my plus one. Now, he rates himself as a bit of a man about town, the P-Train. So we walk into Flemington there, into the birdcage, and we stand there, and there's, you know, people with the camera, not paparazzi, but there's three or four photographers there from, you know, a couple of different outlets, and we have our photo taken. And as we're walking away, one of the photographers says, who's your plus one, Richo? And I said, oh, that's Kane Pettifer, my former teammate. Anyway, you could see Pets go, just the air came out.
Plus one.
But it got worse. Later on that day, the photo had then since been put up online and it goes, entering the birdcage, former Richmond player and Channel 7 commentator, Matthew Richardson, and former teammate Nathan Brown. No.
And he would have been looking for it.
Kane's looking for his own. And then he gets all his mates are sending it to him. So not only did they not know his name, even after we told them his name, they still called him the wrong name. So that's my favourite day at the races.
That is brilliant. I'm going to go straight to a question because there was one around the pea train. What is the best Kane pea brain pedophile story from T. Burnett?
Well, yes, I think this
pea brain, this guy's called him.
This has been told before, but I was injured this day. We're playing Hawthorn down in Launceston and we're favourites going into this game. We should have won, right? Anyway, I went down injured and had to do the rehab session or whatever the morning of the game and was sitting in the box. Anyway, after the game, Terry Wallace, our coach, he decided that he was going to have a crack at every single player, all right? So he goes along, you didn't do this today, you didn't do that, you didn't keep your structure there, you blah, 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 blah. Anyway, you could see Pets sitting down the front and he was our best player this day, all right? He'd kicked three and I think he'd had 20-odd touches. So you could see him going, I'm the only guy who's going to get a little rev up here. And, you know,
yeah, like, little pump up.
Yeah, little pump up. And as I just said, he likes to pump up the P-Train. So, and he called himself the P-Train or P-Plane because in that season, 2 weeks in a row, he was the Mark of the Year contender.
Oh, yes.
So he was the P-Train, but after the two Mark of the Years, he changed his nickname to the P-Plane. So Terry gets to Kane and he looks at him and he goes, oh, you, what do you call yourself? The bloody P-Train, P-Plane, more like effing P-Brain. And he just left it at that.
Oh, the boys would have had a field day with this.
And, mate, I was sitting there and I'm sort of like, everyone's trying. More like effing P-Brain, he went. And you could just see all the life just suck out of him.
Oh,
but anyway, we get to the airport and Terry then came up to him and covered it off. He gave him a little pat and said, mate, you're actually our best player today.
But he's dogged him in front of all the boys. Oh, that is funny.
Yeah, it was good.
That is very good. I've got one around the boys in there. You got to pick one of them because you had some great teammates up there in the forward line. And they're trying to ask me who was your – if you were Batman – who was your Robin? I can't find the question here. I'm going to find it in a second. Anyway, who was it? Because you had some great small forwards, but who was the one that you've worked really well with the best?
Oh, probably Nathan Brown. Yeah. I think, mate, before Brownie broke his leg in the year that he broke it, what year was it? 04 or 5? 04 or 5. He was just about the best player in the comp for about 9 weeks. If you ask Nathan, he'll tell you that. But it's pretty true, mate. Yeah. He was rolling through midfield, having 25 to 30. And he was third in the Coleman medal when he broke his leg. I think he had 31 goals at that point in round nine. So, you know, he was averaging 3 goals and, you know, high 20s. So just could kick either leg, balanced, pace, could go on ball. So probably Brownie.
Yeah, love it. Nah, that's what I was thinking as well. He was, he was a superstar. Get him to tell the weakest Pish Richardson story from Rory Atkins. I've seen that. We won't talk about it because you've done it. But it's just amazing how close they could get to you in the race.
This was actually in the rooms, like at the old footy park. It was like an old sort of social club off the back of footy park and it sort of had the garage underneath it and you could sort of walk right up to the door of the rooms and just hang around for the players when they walk out. There was no real security there, but yeah, that was funny that day. I walked out with a blow-up cast on my arm and I've got a badly broken arm. I was in agony, which had been subsided by the morphine stick they gave me. But the ambulance sort of backed up to where the rooms are and anyone could sort of just stand around the ambulance in the rooms and the Port Adelaide supporter, you know, told me I was as weak as piss as he was sucking on a cigarette I was getting into an ambulance.
That's just outstanding. You would never see that. Oh, you can't even get down there anymore. Couple more, but do you think Harley is the second coming Dusty, Harley Reid?
Man, geez, it's a big call. And, you know, he's got a long way to go, clearly. He's only played half a dozen games, but I see traits there. I mean, Dusty came in and, you know, played great footy straight away, and he was searching for bodies straight away as well.
Mm.
Like, he was always – Dusty would invite you to come at him and you would don't argue, and Harley's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Martin's, you know, won 3 Norm Smith medals and Brownlow. So, look, all indications are, though, that he looks every bit the sort of player Dusty was when he started. Now he's got a long way to go, but gee, he looks good. And he can take a mark too, probably. Dusty can is a great one-on-one mark, but Reed looks like he can really take a big overhead mark. So
he's very excited. I think I saw Chris.
He's got that swagger too.
He does, but he still looks humble as well, which you love. You can't not love him.
Mate, after the Richmond game, he spoke on the broadcast, the Fox broadcast, and that's what I thought straight away. Mm. You're a humble kid. He wanted to pump up his teammates, and that's what Dusty does. Mm. Dusty never wants to talk about himself.
No, he doesn't. That's why he hates doing media, doesn't he? Last one here, but not a question. This one's from Fraser Heron. I can't see the last name here, but not a question, mate. But Richo has done a few sponsor days at Kew Golf Club in the past, and he's cleared the green on 18, hitting the clubhouse not once but twice.
Well, I'm not going to pump myself up here because I am the worst golfer you've ever seen. But if I get onto one, it can go, but that is one in about 15. I reckon those two golf days are the only two times I've ever got onto one.
So hit a mate, fair anyone, golf ball.
Anyone that's seen me play knows that I'm terrible, but like probably a lot of big guys, if I can get onto one, it can connect.
Yeah, most big boys can hit
but
a ball.
But I don't connect, Tommy. Might be one every round.
You're like all of us. I'm actually going to Tassie this weekend, actually. Bamboo. We're doing a four-day golf trip.
Yeah, good.
On the little one. I'm a bit nervous. I'm on one of those little planes. I've never been on one before.
So you're landing at the course.
Yeah. And then obviously King Island, and then the boys have sent it through there.
Mate, you won't have a better weekend than that.
No, we won't. Yeah. We're looking forward to it. It's going to be great. One more question. Someone said, what's the best pub from Devonport?
Ooh, well, we always have a beer at the Alexander Hotel. One of my mates used to run it. Good little public bar. Got a little toad in there if you like to have a bet. And
yep.
Good people.
Yeah, good people is the key. Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Good old rusted on dudes in there.
Oh, we love that. Good, we love a great pub. Well, mate, I got you a pair of the Tribeca Crystal Grey, mate. So chuck them on. I appreciate your support.
Mate, I'll look after these, Tommy. I'm the worst with sunnies. I lose them.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, they look great. You're a big rooster, mate. You know that. I forgot to say, when you were younger, your long hair, I love that look. I reckon that is a...
Mate, it was sort of the look in the mid-90s.
I reckon it still would be the look. If you could pull it back now and be a big...
Mate, if I did that now, I'd need a little bit of tyre black just to run through there to try and cover up a few greys and a few holes.
Starting to seep through.
Fewer holes sort of appearing in a few spots as well.
Oh, it's a bit devastating when you start to get a grey.
Mate, I'm 50 next year, so I'm hanging on by three.
Oh, you're going well, mate. You're going well. I'm only 30 and I've got a couple of greys coming through.
I did enjoy having the long hair back then, but mate, we followed all those American grunge bands. We loved it. That was one of my passions outside of footy. You know, you go watch when they're on tour and all the Aussie bands as well, but Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, you know, all those sort of bands. Yeah. We loved it. So, all the Richmond boys had the long hair back then.
Oh, I love it, mate. Well, Rick's on tour. I just wanted to say thank you so much for coming on. Leave them on for me, Richo, while I ask you. But this is, I know you've got 1,000 mates especially in footy, and I love asking this question. Rick's on tour. Who would be the two teammates that you, obviously ex-teammates that you played with, that you would invite for a weekend away? You've been, the Dahl said, Richo, you can go away. I'll look after the girls for a week, and you got to pick one place in the world. Where would you go? Take the Rixies with you, and who are the two blokes you'd take and why?
Well, that's a tough question. I would definitely take my best mate, Benny Harrison, because we went to school together, we finished school. We played at Devonport together. We played at Richmond together. We live in Northcote now, about 500 metres from each other, so we're still best mates. So we'd take Harrow, and I'd take the pea brain.
The pea brain.
Mate, he's got more front than Meyer, and if we wanted to get anything done, we'd send him off and get it. He'd get your tickets to a gig or get you into a restaurant. I'd take him, and I'd probably head back to South America. I reckon we'd do a little tour around South America. It's such a big continent. I've only seen probably a tenth of what I want to see.
Yeah.
I loved it there. I went there for my honeymoon to Rio, and we had a ball, stayed on Ipanema Beach there. So we'd probably start there and then start a little tour around South America.
Oh, that is brilliant. It's funny, everyone on the Ricks on tour, they always have a sensible guy and then someone that sounds like the opposite.
Well, Harrow's not that sensible.
Oh, he's not? So he's under the radar.
When he gets going, but he's a bit older, so he'd pull us up a bit nod. The train would stay out all night.
Yeah. I'll have to get him on here. Sounds like a cracker. Mate, I can't thank you enough for jumping on. It's been great. Some of those stories, I'm sitting here reviewing our work here, but that David Roden story with the watches, it's got me. We almost had to have a break then. That is as good as I've heard. And it's, of course, Spud's involved.
It's as you know, Tommy, in this industry, and as the years go by, the stories get a bit more mayo on them. There is no mayo on that story.
Oh, it's just brilliant. I have to get that. No, it's great. Well, mate, thank you so much. Mate. I appreciate you jumping on. Well, I really do. Mate. And
love your potty.
Yeah, thank you. It's been great with Armchair Experts as well, doing the live cross. Yeah. You boys have made it so much easier. But to everyone out there, thank you so much for your support. If you want some Rixies, use our discount code ACES at checkout, and you get 20% off. Richo's got the Tribeca crystals on. But yeah, thank you. Enjoy this podcast. Subscribe, like, share it to a mate, and we'll see you next time on Tommy Talks. But yeah, cheers, Richo.
Thanks, Tommy.
One more time, because I really mean it. I just want to say a massive thank you for all the support you continue to give us at the Oz American Aces. If you want to further support us, make sure you like and subscribe, hit the follow button so you can keep up to date with all our exciting shows and announcements. Righto, now it's time to give our sponsors a massive plug. This episode is brought to you by Amy. Clangers happen. Lucky you're with Amy. Aces, I know I always go on about the Rixies, but I got huge news. We have all our styles and colours restocked on the website right now. It's been months. We ran out of stock, but we're back. Get online, grab some sunglasses at rixeyewear.com.au right now and use our little discount code ACES if you want a 20% discount code on the house.